I'm Dave Jackson, cryptocurrency and blockchain editorial writer here at Stockhouse.com. This is episode 6 in our series of Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcasts. And our mission going forward is to help listeners and investors navigate these sometimes murky waters, blockchain technology and digital currency. Today, we're excited to be joined by Peter McCormick, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency trader, blogger, advisor, and miner. He's also the host of the wildly successful podcast, What Bitcoin Did, and creator of the eponymous website. Peter has interviewed a veritable who's who of the international crypto and blockchain community and has provided his listeners with one of the most informative and entertaining podcasts on the internet today. He's also a father of two, soccer fanatic, and aficionado of the old and new school hardcore punk rock scene. Peter joins us from his studio in London, England. Thanks, Peter, for taking the time out from your busy schedule and spending some time with us today at Stockhouse.
No problem, man. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a really kind intro. Thank you.
Well, I can make it even kinder if you'd like.
No, you know, I think that's kind enough. How are you over in Vancouver? Well,
having a fantastic day so far. We're having a lovely summer so far. It's mild and moderately sunny out, so we're very blessed out here. So, Peter, I've given our listeners a little bit of a teaser about your background. Can you top up your bio a bit and let us know what motivated you to get involved in the crypto sphere in the first place?
Yeah, sure. No problem at all. So my background isn't crypto. My background, I worked in digital advertising in the web design, web platform, social media, email marketing side of things. And I had an agency in London, and I spent 20 years doing that, actually. So I'd heard of Bitcoin, and I was kind of exposed to it a couple of times just from, you know, working kind of in the technology sphere. And kind of didn't fully pay attention to it, took a look at it a couple of times, just didn't really take it too seriously. It just sounded like some strange made up money. So I just kind of carried on in my world. But sadly, I got divorced a few years ago, which kind of meant I had to make some changes in life in that my agency was based in London, and I couldn't therefore, I didn't want to be a dad who was only there kind of every other weekend. I wanted to be around for my children, so I made the decision to exit the agency world and be around for my children and not commute. And so that was quite a big change. I took a year off work during that period. I did some work on a startup that ended up failing, but also my mum got sick. My mum, I've talked about this before, my mum, sadly, she got cancer, and we wanted to get her on some cannabis oil. I'd heard, you know, various things about it. The chemo wasn't working, and I was aware that you could, because it's not legal in the UK, the only place you could buy it was the dark web. Mm-hmm. So being the person in the family who knew a little bit, I went to Coinbase. I bought some Bitcoin. I made the purchase. Whilst that, sadly, we got it too late. Unfortunately, mum passed. But during that period, I still had this Bitcoin on Coinbase. I'd noticed this thing, Ethereum, as well. And because I wasn't really doing anything with my life at that point, I read a little bit more up on Ethereum, read more about Bitcoin. And since the previous time when I traded, which was back in 2013-14, a lot had changed. It seemed like the space had become a lot maturer. There were some more interesting projects. There was better exchanges, better onboard and offboarding for enthusiasts as such. So it just seemed a more mature space. Still not really knowing what I was doing, I just kind of threw some money and I thought, let's have a go. I've got nothing else to do. So yeah, I threw a bunch of money and started investing, started trading and fell down the rabbit hole. It was about 19, 20 months ago.
Now, you started up with, now, did you start the blog and the podcast together, or were they separate at first?
No, it was kind of like a weird chain of events. there's a lot of very, very smart people in the space providing a lot of great content, you know, really, really solid content. People who are far smarter than me, who fully understand how cryptography works, blockchains work, which I don't. I have to be honest, I don't fully understand the technical side of things. But I started buying Bitcoin and talking about it to my friends, and, you know, the levels of news started to increase. Most people over the space of last year at one point or another will have heard of Bitcoin, and I expect most people also wanted to get into it because they'd heard some story about someone who became a millionaire from it or something or other. So what happened was I had friends who were asking me about it, and I ended up writing an email to one, which was like this full breakdown from what I understood, which was, you know, it wouldn't have been the most expert email, but it was kind of like, look, this is what Bitcoin is. Here are what these other coins are. This is how you buy it. You need to be careful about security. Just kind of like a very basic 101. And then when any of my friends asked me again, I would just forward that email onto them. And then a few of my friends started saying, well, this is really cool, but it'd be good to know like what stuff you're buying and why you're buying it. So I did this little Facebook group that had probably like 100 friends and friends of friends in it, where I was sharing and writing about, you know, the trades I was doing and why they were, I was doing and everything I'd learned. And then I was out in LA visiting my friend Justin, who I'd known from when he was in London. And he said to me, look, this content's really good. You should just turn it into a website, do a blog. So the summer, I think it was summer last year, June, I was out in Spain. I just quickly knocked up a website on Squarespace and put the content up on there and just carried on writing. And then on another visit out into LA, I went to visit, I got a friend out there, a chap by the name of Rich Roll, who is a vegan athlete, he's a published author. He did this amazing Ironman in 5 days on 5 Hawaiian islands. It's just truly, to do a marathon is amazing. To do any kind of triathlon is amazing. To do an Ironman is just nuts. But to do 5, I think it ended up being 7 days. But he has a podcast, like he's a very successful podcaster. So I visited him and I was chatting to him, and I was like, you know, Rich, I think I want to do a podcast. So he was really super helpful. He told me all the equipment I needed to buy. And while I was there, there's a chap by the name of Luke Martin, who goes by the name of Venture Coinist, a very successful crypto trader, very successful personality. Right. He's very smart. I reached out to him and I said, look, thinking of doing this podcast, would you mind being the first guest? And he was like, no, let's do it. So I did that interview, and that was in, I think that was either end of November or beginning of December last year. And then, yeah, the podcast has kind of become my focus now, the thing I enjoy doing most. It was all just a very strange set of circumstances that was completely unplanned for, that just kind of one thing led to another.
Well, it's all come together, and I think it works fantastically well. So kudos on that, Peter. Now, a lot of our Stockhouse audience is relatively new to the blockchain and cryptocurrency space. Blockchain, Bitcoin, crypto mining, they're terms that are now becoming part of the mainstream tech lexicon, if you will. Can you break it down in cool guys or layman's tech terminology for our audience?
I'll do my best. Like I say, there's many better people out there who know a lot more than me. I would also refer people to go to Jameson Lopp's website, which is lopp.net, which has so many useful resources on there for people wanting to enter the space. It is great. What is the perspective that somebody wants to enter the space? If they want to enter as an investor, then it's different information they need to research when if they want to come in as a developer. But I guess if crypto and blockchain is going to change the world as people think it will be, as they think it will do, then I would just start with Bitcoin. Try and understand the history of Bitcoin and what it is and why it's so important. There's a really great documentary on Netflix called Banking on Bitcoin, which I would highly recommend watching. And then there's also a book that Nathaniel Popper wrote called Digital Gold, which is also worth reading. So that to me is always a very good starting point, because you get to understand the background, who was working on it, why they got involved, and what the early challenges have been, you know, both technically and legally. And from that point, I guess your research journey will depend on what you want to do. If you're thinking of buying into Bitcoin or crypto as an investment, then I think it's important to understand the technology to a certain extent. But then I always say to people, look, I would invest in Apple stock, and I don't know how the iPhone works. So I don't think people need to fully understand how cryptography works. But I think it's important. I think it's important to understand what a blockchain is and why it's important and when it should be used, because it is a rather overused term, and probably its deployment, number of its deployments at the moment, are unnecessary. I think Jimmy Song was the one who said it. People think they can sprinkle blockchain dust over everything and it's going to magically become something of importance. The thing about the blockchain is what it does, it allows for a decentralized ledger of immutable records. And it has a number of other features. But essentially what that means is, in monetary terms, the ledger, so the Bitcoin you have and the Bitcoin I have and the Bitcoin we send to each other, is a definite record which can't be altered or hacked. Essentially, you'd need 51% of mining power, which means billions, to do it. So the blockchain itself if you require some kind of record or database of information which needs to be censorship resistant, immutable, then it's great. So it's great for Bitcoin, which essentially is a global form, whether you call it digital money or digital gold. It is a financial instrument, and it's important. I would be very careful when looking into things and thinking as being an investor in anything which is throwing a blockchain at something which has worked in the centralized space. I don't know. I've probably gone off on a tangent here. Have I answered your question?
Yes. Continue on, please. No, you're
just go on.
Well, no, in terms of, the investment angle with cryptocurrency in general, the do's and don'ts, if you will.
Okay. In terms of investment, well, if you're coming as an investor, the most important thing, the way I compare it is, if you go see a financial advisor and you're looking to set up a pension or start up a savings pot, they usually have that form you fill in with three tick boxes, which is what's your risk profile. Do you want low risk, low returns, medium risk, potentially good returns, high risk, potentially great returns, potentially poor returns? And they have to give you those options when they go and invest your pension or whatever amount of money you give them. And the reason they do it, because different markets are risky. If crypto was in that space, it would be like four levels above high risk, because it's super high risk. It's essentially an unproven project, in that it's proven in terms of the technology works and people are using it. But really, in 5 years' time, we don't know if Bitcoin is still going to exist or it's going to die, or the value will go to zero. We've got no idea. So I think the most important thing is, if you're going to invest, is be very, very careful. Don't go in it with the mindset you're going to suddenly become rich, because that's very, very unlikely.
No, that's green in it. Sorry, go ahead.
But you have a chance of making good returns. If Bitcoin ends up becoming a currency adopted by a specific country, or ends up becoming a base layer currency for certain elements within the crypto space, then yes, the value could go up, and it could go up significantly. But it's, as some people say, it could go up to and be worth $100,000 a day per Bitcoin. It could one day be, it could go down to 1,000 or less than 1,000. Nobody really knows. So if you're going to invest, certainly only invest an amount you're willing to lose, and also do so very carefully. Try not to buy when the market's going crazy and everything's going up in a vertical line. Try and buy at a time when the market seems to be going sideways. And if you're going to invest in alternative assets, then only put very small amounts compared to your Bitcoin. I would say at least 50% of your investment needs to be in Bitcoin, because that's the safest within the crazy world of crypto. That's the safest, least volatile place to have your money. Then, then always kind of invest in the most proven projects with the most proven teams, and then put a small amount in a few little gambles.
Now, I didn't preface this, but you're not just a blogger and a podcaster, but you are an investor. So you've been in there with different cryptocurrencies.
Yep.
Can you give it?
Tell us about your experiences. I think it's taken me probably this 20 months of doing it to have a full picture of investing, and I still think I'm scratching the surface of what you need to learn. I have a strategy which I share on my website, but to be honest, it's dead. It's an irrelevant strategy because I haven't experienced a full bear market, which we've been experiencing since January, which was, which was devastating to a lot of people's portfolios. And, you know, luckily I got in early enough that it, you know, it didn't wipe me out, but you know, I've lost a lot of money from the top. So my experience is that there's a lot to learn in investing, and a lot of investing in traditional markets and Forex are true for crypto, but crypto is just super volatile. So I'd say it probably give me at least another year and a half when I would say I'm actually an experienced crypto investor, because even now I've realized that you have to have kind of been in this game for a long time. And you know, the other thing, Dave, it's always changing.
Sure.
You know, the market conditions are changing. You know, a year ago when I got in, there was no real institutional investment. The banks weren't interested. Now the institutional investors are invested. Now the banks are interested. Now we have custody solutions from, I think it's BitGo and Casa and Coinbase to support institutional investors. We have derivatives. We have futures. So the market has matured in a very, very short time frame. And that's a lot to try and consume and react to in an unknown market. Because, you know, the traditional investors in the stock market or even in Forex, you know, they've got years of experience and years of market data and years of trends which will give them indication of certain things that will affect pricing. You know, they can speculate on a company, but there are certain factors which impact company pricing. The pricing of crypto assets is still relatively unknown. You know, there are theoretical models, but still to be proven.
Well, you mentioned your website a little earlier. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on it? The podcast, once again, we'll give you the pitch for what Bitcoin did and, you know, what separates you from the other writers and pundits out there in the cryptosphere.
I think what probably separates me from a number of other people is I'm not as experienced. So I tend to write from the perspective of somebody who's still learning and very early on. And I guess my angle is that I think that it's quite a scary place, especially on crypto Twitter. Sometimes, yeah. You know, you want to ask a question and you just feel like they're going to turn around and say, well, you're an idiot, or you're going to go on Reddit and they're going to call you an idiot, because some of these concepts are very complicated and very hard to follow. I mean, as an example, there's a really smart guy in the space called Peter Todd. You go and check out his Twitter, go to his website. I mean, some of the articles he writes, I don't even understand what the articles are about, let alone what the content means.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is like, if you want, again, referring back to Apple, if you wanted to understand how the iPhone works, then fully understanding how my voice is beamed to another voice across the world and the technology behind that. But, you know, there's people like me who are never going to be able to understand that. It's just, it's beyond my technical abilities. But I don't.
That makes two of us.
Well, that's good. There's a lot of people like that. And a lot of people just don't have the time. And rather than waste my time trying to learn the full technical details, I try and learn from the kind of more macro position of, What is the potential impact on society? You know, will crypto be adopted universally? Will some of these projects be successful? Is there a business case? Does this make economic sense to me? So that's the kind of angle I come from, and I'm more than happy to be transparent and say to people, look, there's limitations to my knowledge, but at the same time, I think therefore I'm not afraid to ask questions that might come across as stupid sometimes. So I've interviewed Jameson Lopp a couple of times, and I know some people have really appreciated those interviews because he'll do some interviews where it's all technical detail beyond the pay grade of someone like myself. But I've asked him questions and he's able to give answers in a way that help people like me understand without with my technical limitations. So I guess the work I'm doing is probably for the normal guy who's interested in crypto, would like to do a little bit of investment, hopefully make some money, maybe have a holiday or buy a car or put something towards his pension and asking and the questions that they're scared to ask. So that's the podcast. And then with the website, I have a crypto training course, which is super simple, a basic step-by-step guide showing people how to, you know, explaining what a blockchain is and what crypto assets are, why I think they're important, and then kind of step-by-step guides on how to use the exchanges and sign up and buy crypto. So very, very basic. And then my blog, I tend to, and, you know, I share the posts on Medium, but I tend to write things which are my perspective on, as somebody who's created businesses, things that I see going on in crypto, which often don't make sense to me. Let me turn that off. I sometimes look at the crypto space and I look at these token economics. And I see these smart people discussing things and I'm sometimes scratching my head thinking,
yeah,
I'm not sure that makes sense. I feel stupid asking the question sometimes. Maybe there's something I don't understand. Maybe I'm just not smart enough. But more often than not, I like to write about things where I think, you know, I'll give you a good example.
Okay.
So with all the blockchain and crypto startups, they all have these 50-page white papers. And I don't read them. I've read two. I've read the original Bitcoin white paper by Satoshi, and I've recently read the Masari one. And the Masari one's quite interesting, and so is the Bitcoin one. But for me, as somebody who wants to invest, it all goes way above my head. And I actually prefer the old traditional pitch deck.
Yeah.
I like the pitch deck. I like the Airbnb pitch deck, the famous Airbnb pitch deck, which was creating a multi-billion-dollar business.
10 pages.
Yeah, 10 pages. What's the problem? How are you going to solve it? Who's the team? How big's the market? You know, that kind of thing, because it kind of makes sense. The problem I have with these white papers is they're like business plans, and I stopped writing business plans 15 years ago when I realized they go out of date as soon as you start the business. It feels like the crypto space is... it's kind of missing out on the whole lean methodology, which was the kind of whole lean movement that Eric Ries started. Well, he didn't start, but, you know, he wrote the book, The Lean Startup, which has changed the way a lot of people develop things. I feel like crypto is kind of taking a backward step and missed all that. And I think this is why maybe sometimes we struggle with adoption or because some of these projects don't make sense or the interfaces are too difficult to use. I mean, just, you know, again, I'll give you an example. If you want to invest in an ICO and you're using Ethereum, you have to pay something called gas. I think the way you pay for gas is overcomplicated. It's something to come up with a much similar way. There's gas and there's this GWEI thing. And to be honest, for the average person, I just think this is too complicated. So I kind of come from that perspective and try and ask the stupid questions.
Well, we have to break it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to break it down. And when you use the analogy of a corporate deck, that's perfect. We know full well that a lot of these white papers are written by developers and programmers. It's just, you know, the structural components are extremely technically based. And therein lies the rub.
And a lot of these people, you know, when I put the question out there, and again, I feel stupid for asking, but when I put the question out there, the answer often comes back, well, we need the white paper because we need to understand the token economics and how the blockchain is going to work, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, yeah, fine, but there's probably like 1% of people who can read that and understand it. And even at that point, it's all just a assumption that this token economy will work. I think the majority of people just need a pitch deck. And then there's, you could support that with, you know, like if you're doing a technical project, you could have a pitch deck and a technical specification. With this, I think you can have a pitch deck and a white paper on the token economics for people. I just think leading with the white paper is often, it just doesn't make sense to me. I know very few people who read the read the white paper in full and fully understand it for the projects they're invested in. Most people I know tend to invest based on sentiment. And I wish there was, I don't know why I'm the only one saying this, but I wish there were more pitch decks in crypto.
Well, I agree. And I guess the normal segue into that question is the amount of these white papers that have been proven to have been essentially plagiarized by another new altcoin, another ICO, another initial coin offering that comes out of nowhere. And the next thing you know, it's basically a plagiarized piece of junk.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I mean, plagiarism happens in life, or, you know, it happens in art, it happens in life. You know, people are inspired, people create things. I've had my business and I've, you know, I've worked on pitch decks and I've looked at other pitch decks and used them as inspiration. I know others have also carte blanche copied pieces out of other white papers as well. And we have a space full of scams, and it's a very complicated space with lots of shenanigans going on.
Well, if it happens in my space, it's called you're fired.
Yeah. Well, the problem you've got with crypto is you are anonymously sending your investment to an anonymous company where you don't know the people. You're not sat opposite them. You know, if you're raising money from venture capital, you tend to have a meeting or multiple meetings. You meet the people. You sign contracts. It's quite a formal process whereby often you go through a process of due diligence, but there doesn't seem to be too much due diligence in crypto, because it could be a team in Estonia raising money globally for a project which nobody can verify is real, which is why there's been so many scams. I was scammed on the Confido scam. I lost something like $32,000 or whatever on that. Oh, no. Because it was a scam. And yeah, I mean, that this kind of shit happens all the time. But that's a different problem. You know, the white paper itself is a problem, but then the scams themselves are also another problem.
Okay, so this is the absolute perfect segue into the next question. Is you've posted a number of provocative articles critical of the future of crypto, and, you know, specifically the plethora of these initial coin offerings and these nascent scam artists associated with them. Now, what's the real extent of it, Peter? And, you know, are most of them frauds and or Ponzi schemes?
Well, it's a tough one to answer. So it's a combination of things going on. There are scams. There are outright scams. You know, Confido was a scam. There are exit scams. There are people raising money and they just disappear.
But smart people are falling for these.
Yeah, I mean, I fell for Confido. I saw Confido recommended on a prominent news website. I don't want to name it in case I get the wrong one, but it's a prominent tech news website. I did the research. I saw what people were saying on Twitter. I thought, okay, I'll throw a couple of Bitcoins at it. And then a few weeks later, there was a weird note on their website and then they disappeared. All the money was lost. You know, that can happen because you're not sat opposite them being pitched to and then going through a legal process whereby people are showing passports and ID, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that kind of scam. That's the outright scam. But then you've also got the era, which I just call, you can call stupidity or poor projects, or, you know, there are just hundreds of projects raising money, too much money in my mind, for really poor ideas, which aren't going to work, which make no sense, which aren't solving a problem. So, but they're two separate problems, scams and crappy ideas. And sadly, you've got a global investor audience. Now, essentially with crypto, anyone can be a VC. Anyone can invest money because especially a lot of people invested early on have got money. But these people aren't experienced investors. You know, they don't go through the checks that a VC would do. They don't have the experience of knowing what will work, what won't work, what's good in the team. They don't have the analyst. It's somebody going, oh, here's another project. It's an ICO. Yeah, I'll throw 2 ETH, 5 ETH, 10 ETH at this and see what happens. And therefore, poor projects are getting funded by people who don't know what they're doing. It's kind of a space full of kind of stupidity. Mm-hmm. And it's also another issue I have with it is the way money is raised. Like, I like the VC world in that you either bootstrap and get something built so you can show the VCs, and then you raise over small rounds and you raise as you tend to just raise small amounts that give you a certain runway to get you to another milestone. I did an interview with this amazing lady called Jill Ruth, where she said, essentially with crypto, you're raising your seed round and your IPO at the same stage at the same time, which is ludicrous. It's just absolute stupidity. So that kind of structure doesn't work for me. I don't know how it's done, but I would like to see a world where crypto is able to fund projects, but in the structure of traditional investing. So, I don't know, 4 or 5 rounds. Yeah. Now, sadly, at the moment, that's going to be quite difficult because of the legal costs of raising money in crypto. It's just too expensive. The other thing I don't like is these investments are speculative, but these coins and tokens are traded on exchanges before sometimes a product's delivered, or before product market fit's reached, or before a revenue model has been proven. And therefore, people are speculatively trading on something with nothing to back it up. I think most of these coins and tokens should not be traded for quite some time after the funds have been raised, because it just doesn't make any sense. You know, what are you trading on? You're just trading speculation for speculation.
Right. In your recent blog on Medium, is another shameless plug for you, Peter. The Deluded World of Crypto. Now, you came out and you defended Bitcoin as a protector against censorship, a secure medium of exchange, and a reliable store of value. These are the terms that you continually hear as, you know, sort of the catchphrases. I don't want to come out and say that they're dog whistles, but I presume that you feel strongly about this. You know, let's use the example of Venezuelans living with hyperinflation. But what about the investor who simply wants to make money from this? Where's the real value, Peter? Where is the beef?
Wow. So listen, look, I wrote that article to be a little bit provocative, yes. And I'll do that sometimes. Just to put out things that I'm thinking in my head, just to try and gather responses and see what people say. I'm a strong and firm believer in Bitcoin. For a couple of reasons, and I guess this works for other crypto as well, but I like the ability to move something of value from one person to the other person at low cost around the world fast. I think there is something very positive and important in that. I've talked about this before. When I bought my mining gear, I bought $150,000 of mining gear from China. The transaction took 9 minutes to confirm. It cost 30 cents. Wow. And that, if I did that via the banks, I've no idea how I'd send that much money via the bank, and probably couldn't. I probably wouldn't be able to. Secondly, I like the fact that with Bitcoin, you can hold the money yourself and it can't be stolen. I think it was in Greece or Cyprus. I'm pretty sure it's Cyprus, when they were bailed out by either the European Central Bank or the International Monetary Fund. I can't remember right now, but one of the conditions is they would confiscate something like 50% of people's funds over 100,000 euros or something. I can't remember. But essentially... Yeah. The mismanagement of the economy by the government led to your savings being, your hard-earned money being stolen as a condition of your bailout. And to me, this is absolutely scandalous. You know, governments have mismanaged money for years, and I just don't like that. It's therefore proves it's a proven business case, or sorry, use case in Venezuela, where people are being paid in the local currency and instantly transfer it to Bitcoin to maintain value. And actually, even during the bear market, even when we dropped from 20K to 6K, for Venezuelans, their value in their local currency went up because they're in hyperinflation. So that's important as well. So there's some really cool, important things in there, in that you own your own money, nobody can steal it, you can move it fast. The main issue I have with it right now is that it is volatile. You know, it doesn't make sense as money when it's volatile. You know, people talk about, you know, wouldn't it be great if you got paid your salary in Bitcoin? I mean, yeah, maybe like 5%, but you could get paid your salary in Bitcoin on one day, and the next day you could have the same problem as Venezuela's if the market crashes. So some of it's a little bit unrealistic. I think we need to be a little bit more practical about how and whether Bitcoin becomes money. And maybe it's something that will happen in 10, 20 years, you know, once we've got more stable prices. But right now, it isn't itself a useful money because it's volatile, but it's useful to send money. So if you want to, so, you know, I could buy $150,000 of Bitcoin. I can then send $150,000 of Bitcoin to buy something, and the person at the other end can then transfer it back. That is useful and very cool, and I like that. And if people want to get into Bitcoin to make money, yes, do it like you would buy any other investment and do it over a long period of time. And if the project is a success and Bitcoin takes over the world and does what it can do, then you may be able to profit from it.
Well, finally, Peter, last question, and it is my stock question. If you could look into your crystal ball, I'm sure you have one right there in front of your desk. How do you see the future of blockchain and, to a lesser extent, cryptocurrency changing the world as we know it?
I think it will, but I think it will. The adoption rate and use of crypto will be, personally, I think it will be slower than people expect or hope. I think there for the mass population to start using cryptocurrencies, I just think it's going to take time. It is too complicated for the majority of people. There are too many risks associated with it. I quite like the idea of stable coins.
Yes.
More I think about it. So, for example, if I was going to raise money for a startup, which I think crypto is great for, I think it's really cool, and it's a better experience than, you know, getting meetings with VCs is hard, right? It's a hustle. And once you've got them, you've got to go and pitch to them and convince them, and then hopefully they'll invest. And it takes a long time. Raising in crypto is relatively simple. You have an address, you knock up a website, you stick up your white paper, and you run an ICO, and you can raise money globally. That's kind of cool. But one of the issues I have with it, say you raise in Ethereum, and say you raise, I don't know, 2 million in Ethereum, or say you raise 3 million in Ethereum, and then the price tanks. Suddenly, if you've not transferred that Ethereum back into your local currency, which you're paying your bills and your rent in, you've lost value. I think for me, I personally, if I was going to raise funds, I would want to raise in a stable coin, like a trusted backed stable coin, because there's no risk to my funds. There's no risk to my runway. I know exactly how much I need to raise, and once I've raised it, I've got that exact amount. So I think there's a good future for stable coins, and they will have a strong relationship with, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum. But outside of that, I think we're going to see a lot of dead projects and a lot of people lose a lot of money. The elephant in the room for most of these projects, whilst they figure out their token economics, is traction. If you speak to anyone in VC world, that what they will tell you is that the hardest thing with any startup is getting traction. And you can have the best idea in the world, but can you get traction and to a level where what it is you're creating is viable economically? Because if it's not viable economically, it will probably fail. You know, if miners weren't making money, they wouldn't be mining the Bitcoin blockchain, right? So if these projects can't get traction and they can't become sustainable, then they'll probably fail. And I think there's going to be a very, very high failure rate. Many projects going to the wall and a lot of money being lost. So yes, I would say Bitcoin has a bright future, will probably take some time. Stable coins are important. I like tokenized securities, even though a lot of people don't. And I like, but I think there'll be a high failure rate on a number of these projects.
Great stuff, sir. Thanks again, Peter, for joining us today on our Stockhouse Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcast and providing us some great insight. Have a great day. Cheers, Peter.